Hey everybody, Jose Palomino, CEO of Value Prop Interactive and your host for Business Growth on Purpose. And our guest today is Hugo Fuentes, who is an expert in supply chains. And that's a hot topic right now. It's an important topic. So if you're thinking about what's happening, what's going to be happening, and what can I do to improve my supply chain and how it's working for us as we look to grow our business, then listen closely as Hugo joins us right now on Business Growth on Purpose. Well, welcome, Hugo, to Business Growth on Purpose.
Hi, very nice. Very nice to meet you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you making the time. I think we're going to talk about some important things, but just for our audience to have context, you just tell us in a moment, Hugo, what you do and who you do it for.
Absolutely. So, well, my name is Hugo Fuentes. I'm the co-founder and CEO of a company called The Owl Solutions. So I've been in supply chain for more than 20 years. That's my passion. That's my area of expertise. And I've worked for different companies, large, small, medium companies, always in manufacturing and distribution companies. So globally, I've worked in different countries as well. So that's what I love to do, you know, work in different cultures and work in supply chain management, right?
Okay, fantastic. Well, there's probably no topic more important to tackle than supply chain. That's a big topic. So I'm gonna just start off with maybe an observation. And I'm not a supply chain expert, although, you know, working on the strategy side of things, you can't avoid it at some level. And it's simply this: it seems like everybody took, you know, just in time and all these issues, you know, going way back to what Elihu Gulrat and the Goal, you know, 40 years ago, and that really revolutionized how people thought about supply chains. And he started running really tighter supply chains. The pandemic happens, and it seems like if you hit a speed bump at 5 miles an hour, your car's okay. If you hit it at 75 miles an hour, you might rattle pieces off your car. And it feels like that's what happened. So just what happened the last 2 years? What's happening now? You know, just shed some light on that for our audience.
Yeah, no, I think that your analogy is very true. And I think I like it very much. So, you know, my thoughts around this, and as I mentioned before, I've been in the industry for a long time. I had the chance to work for, you know, companies like in transportation and manufacturing companies as well, distribution companies. And one of the things that I believe that is a common denominator is that although, you know, supply chain management is such a critical piece and component for every company pretty much out there, I think it hasn't been given the consideration that it deserves for a long time. And mm-hmm. and that speaks to the level of investment, maybe in technology, in people, in processes that probably deserves. And now, I guess, with the pandemic, I think the level of awareness about this has increased significantly. When you think about the CEO, the average CEO, or the average CFO now, I think they're now definitely much more concerned about the level of, you know, investment. And I'm not talking about, you know, necessarily technology investment per se, but I'm talking about everything, right? So from upscaling, upgrading, you know, the capabilities of the people that works there, training, you know, thinking about the strategy. Back to your example around, you know, the this idea of lean and just in time and sort of some of those, the principles that many supply chains have been run over the last 20 or even more years. I believe that, you know, we as human beings were very good at sometimes overreacting, right? And moving from one extreme to the other. Now everyone is talking about sort of reshoring and moving away from, you know, this idea of outsourcing everything to other places. I believe that we shouldn't panic, right? I think we should try to approach this a little bit more strategically and even thinking about the balance, right? So how can we balance our operations and even, you know, start thinking about what are the critical areas, right? That where, you know, potentially could make a big difference for us moving forward. Now, you know, just to going back to your also question around what happened. So I think that supply chain per se is complex. It's very, very complex. So sometimes, you know, disruption in one variable could cause very, very significant impact all across, you know, your entire network. If you don't have necessarily enough buffers through your supply chain to cover that that variability. And I think we haven't had enough buffers in our supply chains, how they have been designed historically over the last 20 to 30 years. And I think that's something that, again, my call to action would be, you think about the balance, right? So how to rebalance your supply chain without overreacting, but probably getting it back to the center.
Is that also because of a lot of financial engineering? I mean, you tell, like, you know, you tell CFO types that, hey, we actually want to reduce inventory on the shelf. And you think, wow, that's great. I love that for my balance sheet. I don't want all that inventory sitting there. But it goes through, like, well, how do I improve it next year? Well, let's reduce inventory some more. And let's keep reducing it to the point where, you know, we have trustworthy suppliers. They'll have the stuff we need when we need it. But it's like musical chairs. Everybody's counting on the other guy to have the stock.
Right. No, 100%. And I think you touched a very good point, which is behaviors, right? So sometimes, you know, the companies are driven by sort of certain incentives or interests or behaviors that maybe creating the wrong incentives, maybe, right? So, I mean, so for instance, this approach of just trying to reduce your working capital by shaving your inventories down and without even considering the potential implications of that might happen with your customers is the wrong behavior, because I think you're just looking at one variable in the whole equation. I mean, the supply chains in general, in order to manage a supply chain effectively, is a game that has multiple variables. So you cannot think about just one variable. You have to manage and, you know, many, many, many variables at the same time. So including, you know, working capital, including, you know, your service levels, including, you know, cost, your reliability, your response to market needs. So there's many, many, many variables that are involved whenever you make decisions. So it's a multivariable exercise. So if you think about, you know, this logic of just thinking about optimizing one variable, it's not going to work. I mean, you have to consider, you know, the entire ecosystem and approach the discussion looking at the supply chain like a system. It's a complex system that has multiple pieces, multiple parts. And therefore, when those parts are not in balance, so that's what happens when you have a crisis like this, where now, you know, I used to say, you know, the sort of the analogy of, you know, water, right? So the water, the level of the water dropped, and now we can see, you know, all the, you know, the stones and the big rocks, right? Oh, yeah. You know, on the issues. Now, you know, for years and years, maybe supply chains were not really under that such a huge stress test as COVID represented. So therefore, we were not able to see the rocks, right? We were not able to see, you know, the underlying causes that maybe are causing always some challenges around the way how supply chains are managed.
But the rocks were there.
The rocks were there. Right.
They were there, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because my systems professor in my MBA program, he would say local optimization is sub-optimization. You can't, and he is the example of changing a tire. You can't just tighten one nut all the way you think you can tighten it and then try to balance the wheel with tightening the other nuts. You got to go around.
100%. So 100%. And that's exactly what it is, right? I mean, and that's why it gets a little bit more complicated than just managing a few variables, right? You have to really consider the whole equation, and that local optimization is not going to drive you the best result. So you have to consider the entire ecosystem, right? So when you're thinking about your inventory management strategy, you have to also think about your supplier reliability strategy. So if your suppliers become more reliable, probably your inventory strategy is going to change, because now you can, for instance, reduce your buffers, your safety stocks. But if your suppliers are not reliable and you're sort of facing a lot of disruption, you have to find a way to increase your buffers, increase your, you know, inventory buffers, so to cover some of that variability. But, you know, that's just an example of how this is not a one variable game. There's multiple implications here, and as a consequence, you have also working capital consequences and so on, right? So that's is a game that has multiple aspects.
And reality is, and let me limit my comment here mostly to, like, let's say smaller or owner led businesses. A lot of our listeners and a lot of our practice at Value Prop is working with owner-led businesses. So in that case, they are often buying from suppliers that might be a lot bigger than they are, i.e. they're buying steel from a foundry or something like that to make parts. So they don't have the leverage that, like, a large company like a you know, Caterpillar or John Deere can lean into its supply chain and say, we're going to audit you. You're going to show us what your capabilities and how deep you run. But when you're a small company, you know, $10, $20 million, you know, contract manufacturer, you don't have that leverage to tell your suppliers, they have to show you how they're going to perform for you. You know, so how do you solve for that when you're kind of asynchronously related to people you're dependent on companies you depend on?
That's a very good question. And I think, you know, my answer to that question would be sort of one word, collaboration, right? So what do I mean by that? So in the world of supplier customer relationships, I think so one of the underrated things that smaller companies don't really do actively is to become that partner, that collaborative partner with the supplier, where so you as a small organization, you could have a seat on the table with that supplier, showing that you are an organization that plans your requirements, that you are willing to share your information, like your forecast, like your, you know, your future projections, your orders, even thinking about sharing with your suppliers, sort of the rationale behind your ordering patterns. So what's your strategy? So small things that you can do that is going to open up a seat on the table with that supplier, regardless of your size. Because I think about the other way around, psychology, right? So if a supplier perceives that regardless you're dealing with a smaller customer, but that customer is willing to open up, you know, a collaborative discussion by sharing forecasts, by providing, you know, here's my expectations about the market for this year, next year, you know, sharing some stuff with me, my attitude as a buyer, as a seller is going to change. I'm going to be much more open to sort of establish a relationship with you, because I'm perceiving that you are a collaborative person that would like to establish a relationship more than just a transactional, you know, relationship with me. So, and I think that's something that is not very costly. It's just a matter of, you know, opening and building the bridge to collaborate with your suppliers, regardless of the size of that supplier. And I think that speaks a lot more about the style and the culture of the company that you have in front, rather than just looking at, you know, specific numbers and, you know, and yelling each other when things are not working well, right?
Right. Well, you know, one thing that does, and it comes to mind right away, is if I'm a small buyer, I'm never going to get your attention as my supplier by volume.
Right.
Because maybe there's somebody 10 times bigger than me buying.
Right.
Right. But I could be that customer that you actually like dealing with.
Absolutely.
And that you prefer to deal with. And so I love that theme of collaboration, which is a good theme across all ranges and all aspects of business process. Like, hey, let's work together instead of working at odds. But I can hear in my mind an owner saying, yeah, but that supplier deals with a lot of my competitors. So why do I want to give them all that inside information? Isn't there a risk at disadvantaging myself in the market by being too transparent?
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's always steps in that sort of openness or transparency journey, right? So, I mean, of course, I'm not suggesting that you should sort of unveil your financials or unveil things that are critical to your business, right? But I'm suggesting that maybe a way for you to become someone to notice is exactly because of what you said. I'm not the bigger in volume. I'm not going to be the bigger in volume, but I could be the bigger in relationships, and I could be the bigger in, you know, establishing a collaborative, you know, discussion with that supplier, sort of showing that supplier that things are under control in the company as well, and that we're a company that is organized, that is structured, that is well prepared, that when you deal with us, we're a professional organization. Where so therefore everyone likes to work with professional people, right? So so if you think about that, so that's a way for you to gain the attention of a buyer where potentially volume is not your biggest advantage, right?
Wow. Well, you know, and I also think about, you know, a lot of times, and I've worked with companies of that size all the time, they do have some big customers of their own. They're selling upstream. So if they could talk to their suppliers, they may be able to structure things or get, as you said, collaboration on helping them win some of that business.
Right.
As well, because now we're on the same team. It seems like that's the right way to kind of frame it.
Right. And I think that that's exactly the point. And the other thing is that, and I'm going to use the example of data sharing, right? And data exchange, right? So although we're living, you know, in a world where you might assume that there's a lot of data exchange and collaboration of data across partners in a supply chain network, the reality is that we haven't made a lot of progress on that, right? We haven't made a lot of progress as a society yet. And as a result, so we have all of those disruptions impacting, you know, all the partners across the supply chain, because data, which you might expect is something that at this point companies should be able to sort of easily communicate and exchange things like, as I mentioned before, forecast, inventories, and you know, of purchase orders and everything, it's not like that. It's not as transparent as it should be. I mean, we're not risking anything if we're sharing, you know, information around, you know, our potential future forecast. I mean, I'm telling you that this is there's a range, right? I'm not even telling you that it's an exact number, right? But even things like that, it would create a much better and much more positive environment where, you know, the retailer shares information openly with their manufacturing partners, the manufacturing partner shares information more openly with the suppliers share more information openly with the tier one, tier two, tier three suppliers. The whole ecosystem would benefit much more, but that collaboration with something concrete is not still happening massively as it should be, right? Across all industries.
Now, has the last 2 years to that end, the last 2 years, has that gone change in that direction? Have people become less or more collaborative from your observation?
So from my observation, I think one of the reasons why I think all of this disruption happened is because of the lack of effective collaboration. I mean, collaboration could be a very, very overused but empty word. I mean, use the word collaboration. I mean, let's collaborate, right? But collaboration without a purpose and something very concrete and specific. So it's just an empty word, right? Gotcha. So I think to me, one of the reasons why we have all the disruption that we have experienced and seen over the last couple of years is because lack of effective and concrete collaboration. It's one of the factors, not the factors, but one of the factors. Now, to your question, has this changed, you know, lately? And has this driven, you know, a different behavior? I mean, not massively yet, I could say. You know, that's something that I guess,
that's a nice,
you know,
study that I like.
Right. Anyways,
it's interesting, right? Because I think there's a sense, you know, just talking to people all the time, there's some people that think about this deeply, like obviously you do, this is what you specialize in. I do, because I'm helping people with core strategy. But I find a lot of people just hoping that things will just get back to normal. Like, things will just get right. It'll happen in June. It'll happen in July. It'll happen, you know. And we've been waiting, like, the whole last year, we've been talking about things will normalize. Labor will normalize, right? So, and general supply chain will normalize. And I'm still going to, like, a major, you know, just a regular supermarket and seeing entire shelves empty. I said, that wasn't the plan. I mean, I know that wasn't, the management did not intend those shelves to be empty for any reason, and yet they are. And so, you know, I look at that and I say, wow, people are maybe not being as proactive as they could be. And sometimes with disruption is an opportunity to reset and to do things over. And it just seems like a lost opportunity. People aren't taking advantage of it. So my question to you, and I do have a question there, Hugo, sorry, is this. Are we going to snap back to where we were 2.5 years ago anytime soon, in your opinion?
Right. Well, it's a great question. I definitely don't consider myself that I have a crystal ball to tell you that with full precision, but I can give you my opinion. I mean, my opinion is that a couple of things. So there's no way back to a normal as we knew it before. So I think that we're gonna operate in an environment where, you know, some things are gonna be different, right? So I'm saying, as an example. So in the past, if the frequency of disruptions were probably cycles every 5 to 10 years, I think we need to get ready for a scenario where disruptions in the next decades are gonna be more frequent, and we need to get ready for it, right? Wow. And I'm not talking about a pandemic again. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about, you know, the frequency and also the seriousness of certain things. I believe that if think about, you know, I mean, some people don't like to talk a lot about climate change, and you know, they sort of negate the situation. But the reality is that there's more things coming, right? And right. I think there's more, not less. That's what I'm trying to say. So I think that back to that new normal of a certain, you know, cycles of stability and things like that, I wouldn't assume that that's going to be the normal in from now on, right? So I would assume that there will be more disruption. So they better be ready for enabling an internal playbook or a machine within the organization to be ready for, you know, unexpected things. And I think it's always good. And again, when those disruptions happen and things like COVID, I mean, people start now, you know, creating all type of theories around, you know, why didn't we do this? Why? So instead of, you know, getting into that why mentality, which is important, I think I would go into the action mentality. And what's the action mentality? So think about, you know, across your supply chain, what's your weakest link?
Mm.
And what's been your weakest link during those last 2 years? Your weakest link sometimes could be that you are very bad at forecasting.
Okay.
Or your weakest link could be, oh, yeah, I'm terrible at managing inventory. And every time that the CFO just, you know, yells and have too much, you know, everyone is cutting purchases. And then we think that that's the smarter way to get rid of inventory and working capital, but it's not, because you're causing another implication. So, or your weakest link potentially could be your logistics, your outbound logistics, because you're bad at it. And now that with this new requirement for customers that you have to deliver product the very same day or the next day, now you realize that you're not ready for it. So therefore, I think analyzing your weakest link, I think you're making yourself a favor, because now you can define a plan for now actually hopefully addressing that. So next time that you have, I mean, a scenario where disruption is hitting your fan, now you're ready for, at least you're very prepared. I'm not saying you're 100% bulletproof, but at least you're a little bit more, you know, prepared for it.
Well, it sounds right. 100% bulletproof, there really isn't 100% bulletproof anything in life. I mean, we could,
right,
as we know, we could walk outside to pick up the newspaper and get hit by lightning. Anything can happen. But
right.
But I do think what you're saying here just really makes so much sense, especially looking at that weakest link. And, you know, if I were to tell that to somebody randomly, what's your weakest link in your supply chain? I believe most people's mind would go to externalities, their suppliers.
Right.
They're thinking I'm asking about their suppliers. And that's not how you answer that. You say, no, there's a ton of things that might be your internal supply chain weaknesses, and it has nothing to do with the suppliers. And you still have to make that more robust. So Hugo, look, we could go on. This is a great conversation. Really appreciate you stopping by for us. And I'm sure our listeners have just learned a ton, as I have, in just these last 20 some odd minutes. If somebody wanted to know more about you, what you do, or to just get in touch with you, where should they go?
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure, by the way, speaking with you. Thank you very much for sort of providing me with the opportunity to speak with you. And yeah, for sure. I mean, they can basically reach out to me through LinkedIn. Right. So my LinkedIn is a little bit special, because it's LinkedIn is like, you know, improve your supply chain. So if you type improve your supply chain, you're going to find me.
Okay, great. I
LinkedIn.
Like it.
And or you can basically also visit our website. So our website is theowlsolutions.com. So you can visit our website, or alternatively, you just can send me an email. Happy to get in touch with you. Hugo@theowlsolutions.com. And so happy to share some thoughts and establish a conversation.
Fantastic. Well, Hugo, thank you again for stopping by. We'll have all those links on our show notes. But for those listening, you got it, The Owl Solutions, Hugo Fuentes, the expert on supply chains. Thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.